Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We are here for another podcast this week. Yeah, there's no games. It's certainly in the Premiership happening. And yet we have two podcasts.
How? How does this happen?
Well, because we care that much.
That's right, deeply.
You see, some people might go, oh, we'll do podcasts when there's loads more games happening. And we do that as well, to be fair.
Yeah.
let's do loads of podcasts when there's loads of games happening because there's more to talk about. We care so much about you that we're thinking you've got less rugby to watch, therefore more rugby time that you would love to fill with something like this, an extra podcast.
Exactly. Well, an extra podcast created, because that's the created, no, curated.
Well, we're curating, they create.
Do they not curate it by sending the questions?
Yeah.
It feels more accessible then.
We're splitting
PR,
hairs.
You know, PR marketing talk.
Potato, potato. Yeah, curated by you because this is based on emails that we have received to contacteggchasers@gmail.com. And myself, I'm Tim, and him, JB.
Hello, Tim.
And him, Phil.
Hello, Tim.
Are going to field your thoughts and your questions, and there's some good little conversation starters as well. But before we get into that, a reminder, we have now launched a Patreon channel where we humbly ask for your support to make sure that when we can and when things return, we can do the kind of live events, live brunches, and live shows that we would love to do.
And how much is the Patreon, Tim?
Well, $3 per month. So whatever that is in equivalent pounds and pence. I know we already have American patrons that have got in touch, and we're very grateful for that.
So it is important because, I mean, the place that Tim drinks in, we would need, what, 3 patrons a month to buy you a single drink in most rooftop bars. How many patrons would we need for you to stand around with Austin Healey?
I can do that whenever I want, JB. We go to patreon.com/eggchasers. One thing that I do want to flag up, actually, is what I put up there was our World Rugby video. When the World Rugby camera crew came on our Tier 2 tour to Bucharest in Romania with us.
Mm-hmm, they did.
To film us. It's so funny watching that video again. I think you get more enjoyment out of it if you watch, even if you've seen it before, go and watch it again with us now telling you, I was so drunk during most of those video bits that we did.
I don't think you were as drunk as me though, Tim, when World Rugby sent a one of their vlogger people to record me and Phil talking about talking about our thoughts about the game. So the idea was me and Phil would go to a stadium in Tokyo, maybe?
Tokyo, England-Argentina.
England-Argentina. Yeah. So we go there and we meet Juan.
Juan the Man.
Juan the Man, yeah. So really nice guy that World Rugby sent over. He takes our thoughts to start the game. Seems fairly reasonable. Takes our thoughts midway, you know, at halftime. I'd say warning flags should have been raised at that point.
That footage must exist somewhere.
Oh, it does. No.
I think James Abraham might have it somewhere.
Hopefully he's deleted every last trace.
No,
of that
I will be getting in touch with him. I want that footage.
And then right at the end, after several strong zeros, if you've not come across strong zeros, due to Brexit and a new trade agreement with Japan, there is every chance we might be getting strong zeros very, very soon. If you thought coronavirus was serious, wait till strong zero starts landing on our shore. The real danger from the Far East. So They tried to interview us again. And I think I must have given him a good 5 minutes on why Spain should be here and not Russia. I don't know. We were so drunk that I had to cover one eye to watch. This isn't the first off. I had to cover one eye because I could see double. I couldn't actually work out what was going on. I can't remember the last time I was consciously so drunk. But yes.
And then after the game, we both thought we'd lost each other. the stadium had emptied. We were waiting for Juan. I probably fell asleep, and I think I was on the big screen in the stadium as well. JB could not find me, even though he's sitting two rows behind me in a totally empty stadium.
I didn't have a phone. I know Phil's sensible, so I thought if I just stay here, Phil will come back. But of course, Phil's gone to sleep, so I'm sitting there for a good 15 minutes.
So how far away were you?
Literally.
From him?
Two rows of seats, right?
Ten feet, yeah. Less than ten.
No,
feet.
Less than 2 meters max. Absolute tops. 15 minutes waiting for him to come back. He's actually in front of me, nodding off.
Amazing.
Yeah,
I need to see that footage. But the footage see, which isn't quite as dramatic as that, but nonetheless, when you know that we are gradually, so they film us in the morning after the first night in Bucharest, and my eyes are like piss holes in the snow. I'm so hungover, and you can tell when you watch it, the video again, my skin is anyway. And then they film us on the day of our live pod when it starts all fine, and by the end of it, you just, we make no sense. I'm really grateful to have seen that. So anyway, that video is on our Patreon page, patreon.com/eggchasers, and help us, and one thing we are doing to launch this is having a shirt giveaway. We have so many jerseys in the rugby dungeon. I left JB the job. Pick a jersey, JB, to give away.
Yep. Well, what we'll do is we'll tease it and we'll come back to the two jerseys in the runoff for the jersey giveaway later.
In a little bit. Okay, cool. Right.
Hey, Tim, before we crack on, something really trivial and non-rugby. Where do you stand on TV and film spoilers?
If it's current or recent, it's an absolute no-no. You shouldn't do it.
Nah.
If you haven't watched it a year after it's been on general release, then tough. It's on you.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. So, a guy who it's just cropped up into my head now. A guy who came to Japan with us, and a guy we should talk about a lot more on this podcast, but we never do, my friend Steve. He's got a thing. Spoilers. And today he asked me not to spoil Grand Designs for him. In the past, he's also asked us not to give him the spoiler for, wait for it, Ross Kemp in Afghanistan. What did he expect to happen to Ross Kemp in Afghanistan?
And do you normally spoil? Do you normally spoil like location for him or something?
Yeah, they go see several houses.
I've got to say, the last 2 weeks of Grand Designs have been amazing television.
Haven't they? I couldn't watch
really,
the last one. It was
really good.
I've got the last one to watch, and I gather it is a bit of a
no spoilers. They build a house.
They build a hat, really?
Yeah. They build a dwelling, don't they? Really?
No, I gather it's a pretty pretty powerful.
It is a power
of telly.
Yes, but no spoilers for Grand Designs. I've learned my lesson today.
Good.
So no more of that.
Let's go to Luke Murphy then.
Let's do that.
Come on, or Smurf, as he's clearly known, judging by his email address. Hello to you, Luke Murphy, who says love the pod boys. Always helps me through the Monday. You are welcome. That's why we make sure it's there every Monday. Being an Ulster fan myself, I was wondering how Phil ended up being an Ulster fan, considering he's English. I'm just curious, as it's not very common.
Phil? It's a great question. And it harks back to first or possibly second season of the podcast, when, given that I didn't have any team that I supported, we ran a little competition.
And the other context was that you'd retired you'd retired from playing, and the reason you didn't have a club is because you were playing at Championship or National One level, and that was the very reason. So you were exactly as you say.
I was looking for a club, and we had some incredible entries from fans all over the world, actually, writing in, giving a description, a reason why or a series of reasons why I should support their club. And it was a close run thing, actually. And I remember doing various rounds of knockouts and got down to a final two, which were... Can you remember the final two?
Was it Bath and Ulster?
It wasn't Bath. It was Ulster, obviously. And Leicester.
Go on, sorry.
Leicester.
Was it? Didn't you have like...
Thank goodness I did not go for Leicester. That would have been even more traumatic than supporting Ulster for the past 7 years.
Didn't they have some local club teams as well?
Yeah, there were. There was a number.
Rudgley, maybe?
There's a few from America as well.
Yeah.
I think even some from Australia. But yeah, ultimately went for Ulster.
Yeah, because it had the best. It was the entries and the letters and the standard of fandom that came in trying to get filled. Because I think people recognised we could get our club talked about a lot. And fair play for Ulster. And well, it's good to know it's paid off because Luke Murphy is listening. So,
Well, do you know what? We need elevator music. That would be great for this little. Yeah, every time that we read a question. So, Jim Walker, evening all, sitting here watching Bath Wasps. Okay, fair enough. Eddie Jones has popped down to watch a match. Is this essential travel? Surely he can do his work from home. But it's not ideal, but doable. Just wondered what your thoughts were. Okay, Karen. So, here would be my thoughts. I think it's essential. Do you not think it's essential?
There are things you see at a stadium that you cannot see on television.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I mean, okay, so I see why you don't think it's essential. And I think you see it's not... Comedians talk about this, and I'm sure that you get some of this, Tim, as well, which is when...
Well, by the way, I am a key worker, and if I wanted to, I could travel to London for work too, because playing Bon Jovi is is that important.
It really is. It really is. So... I tell me if I'm wrong here, but because your job is perceived to be fun, even though you work bloody hard, it is perceived to be fun. So people don't actually take it that you're working that hard, do they? They're like, oh yeah, Cocker's just off to watch a BT Sport match or just on the radio.
Well, so the radio and the TV are two very different disciplines. And in the case of TV, if you actually add up the quote unquote work I do in a programme, it would come in about 6 to 10 minutes of actual work. But what you have to understand there, and this is very different to radio, the pressure, because I only have say 6 minutes in a program, it's like you're live on the telly, and that minute thing that you do there, you have to nail that.
Yes, I imagine. Yeah. You do.
Because well, you've only got that 1 minute thing, and the timings, the timings of everyone else is on it, so it's a different kind of pressure. Yeah. It sort of bumbles along very slow, not intense, but constantly your brain is thinking, and then boom, intensity and pressure way up.
And you know that there is a bunch of lesser podcasts with their thumb hovering over the Twitter machine, ready to go on that one stumble.
Yeah, of course. But the radio, for example, doing the type of radio I do, it's, you know, if I go, oh, that wasn't as good as I could have done, I go, all right, well, after I've played Bon Jovi, I'll do it better.
News, weather, sport. But I guess the point is, everyone thinks it's fun. And I guess you look at Eddie Jones's job as being the national rugby coach, you think that's fun, that's not essential, but it is essential for his job. And I think what we've learned about sport over the last few months, nearly a year now, is that we need to be entertained, and sports is important. So yes, it is essential travel.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
There you go. Next question. Oh, go on, Phil.
Just on that, I will say that just how many games Eddie Jones has been getting to. I mean, last weekend he was at every live game. As in, it was three, Friday night, Saturday night and Sunday. And this weekend, I'm sure he's at the Saracens Ealing game this weekend. So he's working bloody hard, is Eddie Jones.
Yeah. Do you want to go with another question, JB?
Yes. So Jack Penrose says, sliding into your DMs once again, a la Phil. Is that right, Phil? Is that how you do it? Do you introduce that?
I wouldn't like to give away my trade secrets.
No, you'd do it from a burner account, wouldn't you? Like a professional. with a short
I certainly wouldn't lead with my full name.
No, absolutely rookie error here. With a shorter message and question. With the Lions tour, seeing as Australia managed to get many fans into the stadiums around the country for the Tri Nations, could it be possible for you to war game merely trading the 2025 Lions tour to Oz with the South Africa tour? Well, there we go.
So as in just sacking off 2021?
Yeah, just swapping them around, I guess.
So 2021 goes to Australia and 2025 goes to
South Africa.
New Zealand. New Zealand. South Africa, yes.
Yes. So he's outlined some benefits. Stadiums, Australia has COVID under control, yada, yada, yada. Drawbacks, 14-day quarantine. And I think that's probably the drawback that we need.
Yeah. So I don't know if either of you have seen anything from Rob Carney over the past few weeks, who has just travelled from, obviously, Dublin to Perth. But as part of his travel to Perth, he had a mandatory 14-day quarantine in Brisbane, where him and his partner were literally locked in a hotel room.
Did it have a balcony?
No balcony.
What?
No. So there was no balcony, no opening windows. They did not have a key to the door. Jesus, they were locked in.
That's prison. That's actual prison.
That's unreal.
It is prison, and they paid, I think it's something like £3,000 each for the privilege
of doing that.
Yeah.
And they were just brought food for 2 weeks.
And the frightening part is when this, reading the comments in the Times today on the story saying pretty much that's coming to the UK, it was like, more!
Harder!
More! Need it more!
Yeah, weird.
It's weird times.
Yeah, people are odd. I mean, I can't see. It sounds nice in theory. The problem is you've got to unpick a load of commercial deals, a load of sponsorship deals, yada, yada, yada. It's really bloody difficult. And actually, the 14 days... I mean, 14 days for the players is bad enough. It's unworkable for the players, and it's certainly unworkable for me. If I've got to have 2 weeks off to quarantine, 2 weeks to watch it, and then 2 weeks to quarantine back on this side of the planet... Yeah, sorry. Sorry, Jack, not flying.
Got an email here. Who did you say that one was from?
Jack Penrose.
Oh, okay, cool. This one's from Jim Walker. I don't know if... Was there another one from Jim Walker?
There was another one from Jim Walker.
Oh,
was
Jim! Jim!
Essential...
We got a big stack of emails here. Anyway, oh, this is fine. So it's a Bath one. It's just... he says, apologies, gents, another query. There you go, that's fine, I'll let you off.
I should have stapled these together.
Noticed that Bath's internationals have their country's flag on their chest. Yes, they were the first club to do that. There are many more which do it now. I like that as a touch.
I do.
As some other clubs do. I also noticed that Anthony Watson has a Lions badge. I didn't notice that.
No, I didn't.
I'm going to keep my eye out for that. He says, however, Taulupe Faletau doesn't have any badges. Do you know why? That must just be a one-off mistake.
Yeah, must be, because that's what Bath do, isn't it? It's always been the Bath thing.
Yeah. Faletau's not going to say, nah, guys, don't want Lions, don't want Wales.
Was it a reserve shirt, maybe, or a sub shirt?
Yeah, there's two things that would make sense to me. One would be he's ripped his shirt or got blood on it and he's changed it at halftime and it's a no number. Or, which doesn't seem likely, but because of his Tongan heritage, he's decided he doesn't want a Welsh badge, but highly unlikely.
Yeah,
I agree. Okay. Must be an aberration.
All right. Well, I'll go straight to Gav Hegarty then, as that was just a supplementary question.
Okay.
Gav says, love the pod. It's a regular for me every Monday morning. But I did take a few weeks off work over Christmas, so I'm catching up now. And in terms of the most valuable players you were discussing, you mentioned Andy Goode, Richard Wigglesworth and George Smith, but I think you need to talk about Brad Thorne in that category. Not a name we mentioned. And he goes on to point out he's the most decorated rugby player bar none across two codes. And he did play in the Premiership for Leicester.
Yes,
but didn't get any silverware while he was here. But it's worth just reflecting on Brad Thorne's tally. In rugby league, he was a Super League and World Championship winner. NRL three-time winner.
Wow.
State of Origin two-time winner. And played test matches for Australia as well. In rugby union, he won the NPC title twice. He won Super Rugby with the Crusaders. He won the Bledisloe Cup five times. Tri-Nations titles three times. World Cup winner. An 87% winning ratio for New Zealand. Heineken Cup winner with Leinster.
Leinster.
And Pro 14 with Leinster.
So what we're saying is quite good.
He might be the most influential club player of all time.
Interesting. I mean, I do think we said the Premiership, in fairness, but we'll take Brad Thorne all day long.
Yeah, this is nice to reflect on a legend like that. Go on then, James.
And also,
go on.
And just to add to that, the Esportif Intelligence, which was the article, the Twitter account that prompted the whole conversation, they flagged that of the combined leagues, top 14 Guinness Premiership and Pro 14, the second row position is the most valuable overall, with it being the single most valuable in the Pro 14 and the second most valuable in top 14 and Premiership. So that also stacks up. Not only is he the most valuable, he's also in one of the most valuable positions as well.
Yes, quite.
JB?
I have an email here from Eddie Head, and he says, "Greeting, gents."
I like that.
Ed Head. No rugby. Looking forward to listening to the chat. And we are looking forward to having the chat. Now, effectively, what he has asked, and he's made sure that we know that this is edgy because he's highlighted controversial and underlined it. But he wants to know about, with no teams relegated this season, should this mean no teams promoted? Exceptionally tough on Saracens, but we keep hearing we are in exceptional times. And had Saracens not transgressed to the extent that they did, or had opened their books to escape a second punishment, they would not find themselves in the Championship. It would be Leicester. Yes, it would. Appreciate Ealing have just beaten Saracens, but over a season? Even in exceptional times, how can the RFU change promotion relegation criteria mid-season again? Well, we've just had this chat.
On the last podcast,
and I have an incredibly dim view on it, and it's not changed particularly over the last 24 hours either.
I see what Ed Head is saying, in as much as, and I've got some sympathy with that thought process. The difference being, I don't think you can assume it's a foregone conclusion that Saracens win, even though they are heavy favourites to get promoted, and it wouldn't be fair on Ealing to change the rules. And actually, do you know what? Saracens are serving their punishment, so it's not fair on them either.
Wait a second. So, come March, the Championship's meant to kick off.
Yeah.
But they can have no fans. So the Championship say, look, we can't pay our players. We're not going to open up the club. We're just not going to do this. We're going to arrange some friendlies. There's no Championship. Meanwhile, Saracens have been playing Ealing and Doncaster. And because of this early loss and subsequent other losses, because Saracens thought of this as a warm-up event, what's actually happened is the only set of results that we can work off is this three-way competition launched by Ealing. It's even called like the Ealing Cup or
the Trailfinders Trophy or whatever it is.
The Trailfinders Trophy. This is the only thing. I mean, what else could we possibly go off? It's meant to be a performance up and down. So in that case, it's very hard to see. I mean, Saracens need to be treating the Trailfinders Cup a little bit more seriously, because this could be the only thing that they have to hang their hat on, except for Nigel Ray's millions. Mind you, Mr. Trailfinders is not exactly poor.
Yep.
Albeit, his business is getting hammered.
Yes, but I imagine there's going to be a slight pickup of pent-up demand for travelling as soon as...
I hope so.
Yeah, as soon as...
Bloody hope so.
Ealing are able to play in the Premiership, people are travelling, Mr. Trailfinders will do fine. That's an interesting question. Who would you... You know,
I'm not up for no promotion. I'm not up for no relegation, but I'm not up for no promotion.
Like to see... I don't know. Leicester Tigers get relegated into the Trailfinders Cup.
I'm against no relegation.
Yeah, this completely
changed, but I'm against even more than that. I'm against no promotion.
Yeah, I mean it is the naughty step. We need the naughty step. There we go.
Good point, well made though, Ed Head. Thomas Povey, afternoon to you, Tom. Tomo, the big T dog. He says afternoon, gents. Obviously wrote this in the afternoon, 12 minutes past 3. I'd say that's peak time for writing emails. If you're doing a day's work, that's sort of mid-afternoon little window of time when you're just sort of tying up loose ends a little bit in an office job. that'd be a perfect time to email. He says, a topic to wind up non-England fans, perhaps. If there were an England Saxons squad team, where would they finish in the Six Nations?
Ooh.
That is a good question.
So if Eddie Jones just went, right, I'm giving the first team a year off because of the Lions and because of everything else going on, I'm just going to pick Saxons, going to pick all the young guns, second teamers in the Six Nations, where would they finish? It's quite a good question, Tom.
Above Wales, I would guess.
No.
Oh, I would say, so what, in this current incarnation of Wales? All right, flip it round.
Beat Italy. They'd be above Italy. So they'd be at least fifth.
Yeah, that's where I am. I can't see them beating... Well, there's no chance they're beating France.
Nope.
But England's second team, based on the 28-man squad we picked in the last podcast, that would still include in unreal players. Like the front row, for example, would be Benno Abano, Tom Dunn and Will Stewart. It would be like the Bath front row and you'd have...
When you say those names, I'm like, yes. And then when you say the Bath front row, I'm like, oh, no.
but you would have Sam Simmons and...
Sam Simmons, Lewis Ludlam, and Zach Mercer.
Or Mark Wilson.
Yeah, you'd have some quality players in there.
Ben Spencer might actually get a pick. Magic Marcus at fly half with Joe Marchant and...
You could have Sam James.
Yeah.
Simon Hammersley. Marlon Yard.
Yeah. And Adam Radwan.
I think, look, if you put all the best players in England that are available, I mean, Ollie DeVoto.
Ted Hill.
Brilliant player.
Ted Hill, class.
If you put them all together and you said to Scotland, Wales, Italy, pick what you want, guys. Have what you want. I wouldn't be surprised if half the team is made out of those excess players.
Well, certainly for Italy, it would be a majority.
Yep. Wales. I mean, you know, no disrespect to Johnny Williams whatsoever. I think he's always been a great talent. It's great to see him back playing. And I'm glad he's with Wales. Where was he in the pecking order for England? He's starting for Wales now.
Yeah. Same with the Saracen centre, whose name's gone out of my head.
Nick Tompkins.
Tompkins, yeah. Same with Chris Harris.
Will Rowlands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of lads. Mind you, Will Rowlands is bloody massive.
Yeah.
I mean, he is actually enormous.
He is huge.
How did he escape the attentions of England? I do not know.
Yeah.
You'd have Dave Ribbons and Charlie Yules as your locks and stuff. So, anyway, you're right. England have got some serious depth. And I think they'd finish possibly fourth. On a very, very good year, they could sneak third, but more likely fourth or fifth.
Well, do they replace England? That's a question, really. Because if they replace
let's assume they're replacing England.
Yeah, because that means that they sneak up a place, right? Because otherwise they'd have to finish below England. That made no sense.
So France would finish above them.
Ireland
would finish above them.
Scotland probably would, absolutely
would, actually. And, you know, they could easily finish above Wales.
Possibly.
Fifth, possibly fourth is the answer.
Mm. Certainly they wouldn't finish ahead of Gatland's Wales.
Not Gatland's Wales, no. Gatland's Wales could be winning the whole thing. No. But Pivac's Wales, fair game.
Yeah. What you got, JB?
Well, you were just implying that you'd like to know more about Edhead. So here is a supplementary question. He just likes to lay his cards on the table. A girly back. Now, we can't say girly. He doesn't mean that literally before you get angry. But he played in the mid-80s to the mid-2000s.
Yeah, let's take that as that's intended. Like a jovial, joshy, loving...
I thought he hated women. I mean, I've read that clear as day. I don't think we need to discuss that.
Yeah, okay.
Had opportunities to play against Dean Richards, John Wells, Steve Brain. I just love the game, as do we. Anyway, let's get into some current issues and a discussion. And I think I'm going to skip the current issues because we've got a lot to talk about. And I think this is actually quite an interesting question. But effectively, why are there so many replacements introduced to the game? Well, why?
when were replacements introduced?
No,
why? Yeah, so... No, I'm just also going, I'm thinking when as well.
Okay, so he just...
Because initially it used to be, and there's a great, the great one is Graham Dorr was the backup hooker for Brian Moore back in the day.
Yeah. Yes.
During a time when only injuries meant you could become a replacement. As a result, Graham Dorr, there was nothing in it, really nothing in it between Brian Moore and Graham Dorr. Graham Dorr was in the England squad that got to a World Cup final, that won Six Nations tournaments, and his number of caps was tiny because he was behind Brian Moore.
Certain Warren Gatland.
Yeah, well, I think, in fact, Warren Gatland never got a full cap.
Wow.
Even though he was on the bench for a number of years.
Wow.
Yeah. So actually, Ed does say this, as an old fart, back in the day, there were no replacements, but one player was allowed on when injured. I wouldn't like to see that. I think it's a professional game, and I think the impact of the bench is now really, really important. I actually enjoy it. I think more things that add more strategy to the game, the better. Mm. I would like to see us taking a step further and have rolling replacements, a fixed amount of rolling replacements. I think that then puts even more value on good coaching and strategic thinking. So
along the lines of rugby league.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a really interesting article that I read. And the reason I read it is because in Toc H's league and in Broughton Park's league and basically all the lower leagues around, certainly the North West, we have rolling substitutes. So for some reason, Toc H have five. Got no idea why. At a high level, Broughton Park had three, as you well remember, and you could come on and off. And it was great. And the reason they do that at the lower leagues is so we can get as many lads involved as we possibly can. Anyway, I started reading about how do you use your rotations? Because there's obviously an art to it. I'm not the first person to ever have to deal with this. And in the NRL, they pose the question, do you want your best team starting a game, or do you want your best team finishing a game when the majority of points are scored? Also, when are the intervals that you change? Like, so should you change your, if you could, would you change your scrum half who runs the most miles 10 minutes before the half, keep them on 10 minutes after half, and then reintroduce your starting scrum half? What are your options? And I think that's actually a really important subject and question.
I'd be up for less replacements and that potentially. One of the arguments for less replacements, or fewer replacements, sorry. Thank one of the arguments for fewer replacements is to do with the fatigue you get in players, and that would change the shape of the players, and that ties in with another hot button issue in rugby at the minute with concussions and collisions and such. And I would like to see anything that doesn't alter the game that we love too much but reduces the size of the players that we love. And I think fewer replacements would do that. I wouldn't be against trialing to see how the rotations worked, because I think that it, for the reason you said, the sort of power play element, the tactical element, the coaching element, it could make it quite exciting, actually.
I think shrinking replacements to five would be quite good, because I like to see players that can do various things. So a front rower that can do more than one position, a back row, second row, a half back, a generic back, and then someone else.
What do you reckon, Phil?
It's a very interesting question, and I don't think there's been the amount of thought that we're even putting in now to this to get to where we are. I mean, the last change of replacements that I can remember was about 2012 or 2013 when they introduced the second prop.
Yeah, and it went from six to seven.
Or seven to eight. It's a 5-3 or 6-2 split now, isn't it?
Oh, correct,
it?
Yeah.
That's the last change. I like your point, Tim, on the making the overall size of the players slightly smaller. And so I could get on board with having probably slightly fewer replacements. And indeed, if you had interchanges, that would probably have the reverse effect. Certainly, I think back to when I watched quite a lot of rugby league, you used to have effectively two sets of props who were as big as they could possibly be, and their job was to run as hard, straight and hard as they possibly could do for 20 minutes, and then they'd have a 20-minute breather, and then they'd be back on for 20 minutes, and then they'd have another 20-minute breather.
Big Willie Mason.
Willie Mason, yeah, great example. All teams just had, they had two sets of props, but they could only run around for 20 minutes at a time.
That said, may I ask, did you enjoy it?
good question.
Yes.
Certain elements of it, yes.
But that's 8 replacements and interchanges. I would not be for that at all.
Yeah. Interchanges with 5 replacements or maybe
potentially,
4.
Potentially.
Yeah. The strategy, I do really like the strategy of, well, when do you play your best players? When do you play your strongest players? I don't like the finishers or game changers or whatever you want to call them. I don't like that. I don't like the explicitness of that, even though I'm totally on board with the strategy element of it. It's like, I don't know, it's a bit of an Americanization, isn't it?
It is, yeah. But just think about with our benches that we have at the moment, right? What would just happen if you started your bench and then you brought everyone on 30 minutes into the game? So you do it exactly the opposite way around. I wonder how that would pan out. Because yeah, eventually...
Your bench is kind of like a night watchman. Or like your starting player. They take the edge off. They like see you out for 30 minutes, take the edge off, and then your real team can play.
Yeah, yeah. So if you think about England, my criticism of England have been they come out ferociously quick. And they tend to punch themselves out. Well, I don't mind if the second team punch themselves out, or the seven guys they start with, or you know, whatever it is. And then you bring on Itoje, and you actually. So this is my argument. Sometimes you don't use your bench willingly enough. But if you had an incentive to bring them on, and this is more of a lower level thing, you would do it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If your club captain sat on the bench, you would bring him on.
The factor in this that I think I get what you're saying, but the element in this is the opposition are playing for 80 minutes as well with exactly the same resources you have. So it shouldn't be, if one team is punched out, then it might just be that the other team has superior conditioning.
So think about this, Tim. Just think about the like a graph of performance. You would assume, wouldn't you, if you had your first graph of traditional performance, it would start very, very high and slowly tail off and then come up a bit as replacements come on. Well, you're just flipping that. So you'd see the tail end of it at the start. As it dip 30 minutes in, then you bring on your big gun. So you'd have your spike just before the half, and then you've got the half-time rest, and then you're full at it for 40 minutes.
Interesting one, Ed. Started a good conversation. Nice one.
The other element of it, which Tim, you definitely touched on, is the injury side of it. And there was a really good thread, it was a while ago now, 6 months or so ago, by Ross Tucker, who's heavily involved. We reference him quite a lot. He's heavily involved in World Rugby's injury awareness, injury audit type stuff. And he was putting the argument raising the question really as to whether injuries are more contributed by a power game. As in, the fresher a player is, or the fresher two players are when they're running towards each other, the faster the closing speed will be. Therefore, the more energy is transferred or more power, and therefore the more injuries there are. Or is it a fatigue scenario where the more tired you get, the more you play, the weaker your joints and muscles are, and therefore the more likely to get injured you are? And in reality, kind of the conclusion, well, it's both. It's both have their part to play in this, but there's certainly a risk of greater injuries when you get more fatigued players coming up against fresher, more powerful players. And I think all of that, to my point before, there's probably relatively little thinking about the position that we've got ourselves into with 8 subs. And it's something that could do with some intelligent understanding and thinking around, well, what is actually best for the game, for the spectacle, but also for the injuries.
Yeah, and 8 replacements is not best for the game.
Yeah. Now, before
I tend to agree.
Before we carry on, just let me say thank you very much, Ed. I have picked up one question, but he's raised multiple points. Email, and I've read the whole thing.
Keep that in the file.
Keep it in the file. There you go.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends.
For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I've got an email here from... Hold on. Why is it not playing? Oh, there we go. Oh, nice. Lovely.
That is nice, isn't it?
I've got an email here from Don Fletcher. Which, isn't that the name of Flathead in Home and Away?
Is it?
Donald Fletcher, wasn't it? Donald Fisher. Not Flathead. Never mind. Anyway. He says, afternoon, chaps. Again.
Afternoon?
4 p.m.
Afternoon.
There you go. You can tell... This one was written at 4 p.m. Seems to be the time. Listening to your last mailbag pod, I thought I'd jot a few notes down about how we can improve the game in no particular order. Right,
yes,
so
please.
let's not linger on these. But he says one, ban the caterpillar ruck. Yeah, done.
No,
referees enforce the time as soon as the ball's available. Don't wait till it's at the back of a caterpillar ruck to say use it. Done.
Perfect.
Implement the 50-20-20 rule.
It has
been trialled, right?
It got trialled in Super Rugby AU, I think.
Did was there any conclusion about what impact it had, if any?
No, but there were some very loose and very exciting games, albeit a bit wild, okay. From what I saw. I'd like to see it a little bit more, actually.
Okay.
The 50-22.
We've said this one before. To win a not straight in the line out from the referee, you have to actually get someone in the air. 100%.
Yep. In. Yep. On.
Yes, yeah. You on can't. Not straight is irrelevant if you're not competing.
Yeah.
Correct.
Unless it's outside the bound, there's a different standard, I would say. So if you're competing, it's down the middle. If you're not competing, it has to be within the confines of the lineout.
I'd even go, I don't care. It's tough. How can you complain about how straight or not straight the ball is?
Because I could pass it straight
because,
to my
because, nine. Well, because if you haven't got anyone in the air, then they haven't had a material advantage. It was an unfair material advantage.
But you can't just throw it to the nine.
Yeah,
it's got to be caught. Yes, it's got to be caught in someone standing in the lineout.
Yeah, it's got to be within the confines of the outside arms.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, that'd be good. That'd be less scrums and more people in the air, which would actually create more opportunities for attacking. So yeah, nice one. I'm with you there, Don. There's a bunch of these, but I'm just going to jump to this one. I love this. To make international windows more of a spectacle, and imagine this building up to a Six Nations. But also for Premiership or Pro 14 or whatever the tournament is, how much would you love this? And I've actually suggested something like this to guys at BT. Anyway, ooh, I'd love to see some sort of combine where testers are sent to each camp to do, for example, max bench press, max squat, max chin-up, a Bronco. They could do height-weight measurements that are accurate. So these seem to be a joke.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Knowing this would make viewing so much more interesting for the casual observer, and you would think you could get a sponsor for each event. For example, Duracell for the Bronco running, ooh, a JCB for some of the strength thing, and bringing extra pounds into the sport. I love the way you're thinking, Don. More than anything, I think of this, and as someone who works, for BT, how cool would it be if, just as a thing, for like you say, for casual rugby fans, and just an interesting fact. You know, a little Benno Abano makes a great run, and you come back and you have a little graphic that comes up and says his max lifts. It'd be so good, wouldn't it?
Okay, so the reason I'm laughing, right, is because the NFL have some ridiculous ones. So there's one about Calvin Johnson. So Calvin Johnson, the old
Megatron,
the old receiver for
what a nickname! How did he get the name Megatron?
It's a great nickname. The old nickname for the Detroit Lions wide receiver, right? He was, I don't know, 6'5". He had a vertical leap of some stupid amount. You know, he had a wingspan of something amount. So they had a graphic. What do you reckon that this graphic was to demonstrate, you know, what a good receiver he was?
Wingspan.
Not quite.
No.
Not quite.
Length of his arms? I don't
know. So judging by his vertical leap, his athleticism and the length of his arms, they put a picture of a two-car garage. So the idea was he could cover basically the distance of a two-car garage. So all the quarterback has to do is throw it in the vicinity of the garage, and you know that Calvin Johnson's going to come down with this ball.
I like that. So he can jump high enough to get to the roof and can reach far enough to get to the side. That's cool.
Did either of you see there was a Cristiano Ronaldo header about 2 years ago where it was an absolutely amazing header, but he leapt a huge leap.
Yes.
And he headed the ball about 2.5 meters off the ground, probably slightly more than that. And there was a graphic on one sports show that showed his head higher than the world record high jump. And it said Cristiano Ronaldo jumps 2.5 meters in the air and the world record high jump is 2.4 meters. Clearly not understanding that only his head was 2.5 meters, but the whole body of the high jumper travelled over 2.5. It's such a ridiculous graphic to compare the two things.
It would be quite cool to have a second row with such a large wingspan. It was basically the size of a very small single barn door. So you could legitimately say, well, you could actually legitimately come up with that trope.
Yeah, I like it.
Here's Dave Ward. He just needs to hit the barn door.
We can argue about exactly how it's done, but that suggestion from Don Fletcher, I absolutely love the way he's thinking, because we talk about trying to make rugby accessible for fans. I just think it's cool. It's just really cool. It's interesting. It's fun. I'm sure there would be players who were amazing rugby players but are not gym monkeys who might be embarrassed. That's probably why this sort of thing hasn't happened.
What kind of fun things would you like to see then?
Well, I think max lifts is one great one, for example.
Do you think it'd be cruel to tie
a 40-yard dash time, like the combine, yeah. Vertical leap, how long your wingspan is exactly, or how... in Maro Itoje's case, I'd love to know his shoulder width, waist width, because that ratio is outrageous.
So I don't know. Maybe this is cruel. I don't know. I don't know if we could get away with it in today's day and age, but it's certainly something I'd try. I would tie a rope round the horn of a baby rhino, and I'd have Ellis Genge with like a tug of war to see if he could pull the baby rhino.
It's like the new incarnation of Brian Habana racing a cheetah.
Yeah, Brian Habana racing a cheetah is right up there.
But that's the thing you could do. If you got the 40-yard dash videos of the fastest people, like Adam Radwan, Johnny May, Lewis Rees-Zammit, you had that, you could then superimpose different animals running alongside them.
Yes!
So you go, he can run as fast as... Or to put it in context, this is how fast a cheetah runs, and here's Lewis Rees-Zammit. The cool stuff like that would be great.
Oh, do you know what happened to me, animal related, the other day, Tim?
Animal related.
Genuinely happened to me.
You got swooped on by a seagull that nicked your chips.
No, I collided with a badger.
What?
Yeah, I was running in Chorlton, where we live.
What? You were... I assumed you were going to say you were in your car.
No.
You ran into a badger.
No, I was running up the old tram lines in pitch black. And then out of one side of the hedge, this badger came out in front of me. And I had to swerve to avoid it. I must have missed this badger by about 2 foot. Like, what the hell is that?
You must have shat yourself.
Yeah, it was terrifying.
Want to mess with a badger.
No, you don't. And I work, you know, turns out they can run at 18 miles an hour after a quick search. The only reason I knew it was a badger is because I could tell by its tail afterwards. Big old thing, squat.
It's like a dog crossed with the way they walk, with the little squat legs.
It's like a dog crossed with a devil.
A dog crossed with a crocodile.
Yes.
Like a dogadile. Badgers are dogadiles.
Yeah, it can run 18 miles an hour at top sprint, which is only a couple of miles an hour slower than me. So,
Anyway, thinking like that, I think it's brilliant. I think that's a fruitful avenue that rugby should go down. Colliding with badgers, yeah.
Definitely.
We've got another question there, Jay.
I've run out of questions, but why don't we take a break and talk about our shirts?
Go on, Phil.
Oh, sorry. Well, before we go for another question or talk about the shirts, I found some very useful information.
Oh?
Now, since I can't remember who it was, referenced that they've never seen Talupe Faletau with a Wales flag on his Bath shirt. I've been trying to find Talupe Faletau with a Wales flag on a Bath shirt, and I could not find one. So then I started searching for other players.
Right. I'm sending a text out.
Well, let me give you a full update. I could not find one. So then I was like, right, let's just check. I'm certain they'd do it. And I found Watson and Joseph and Matavesi with a Fiji flag, Kanfor Tuolii with a Samoa flag. And I was like, right, maybe it's Wales. So then I found Priestland with a Wales flag. And then I must have looked at my 1,000th image of Faletau in a Bath shirt. And I finally found one of him with the grey shirt from about 2 years ago with a Wales flag on the chest. But it seems like a very, very rare thing for Faletau to be wearing a Bath shirt with a Wales flag on it.
Isn't that interesting?
It has happened. It has happened. I can confirm.
At
least once, yes.
Wow.
So this
possibly only once.
Right. So now we know that that is definitely a thing. We're back on the case. We will get back to you with an answer on that.
But I've not seen anyone with a Lions flag or a Lions symbol, which is what it came. Yeah.
I would have every badge on there, personally.
You'd have what, sorry?
I'd have every badge on there, personally.
And again, to give Bath credit, they were the first to do it. So fair play.
And it looks great.
It does.
It really does. A lovely little touch.
Yep. Right, back to the shirts. Patreon.com/eggchasers. We humbly thank you in advance for your support of the podcast. If you enjoy what we do, if it gives you any enjoyment whatsoever, you can, well, effectively, we've called our Patreon subscription Negroni. So in effect, you can buy us a Negroni. In reality, you can make sure JB does not have an embolism and we can pay someone to professionally do the sound for live shows when they return.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
And in exchange, we have, you'll get priority access to live tickets, which is one of the big focuses we want to have when we're able to, again, is get the live shows, pre-game match day brunches at grounds around the UK. And also we've got a shirt giveaway as well, which we'll do in raffle form among Patreons at regular and random intervals. And the first one, I gave JB the challenge, right, we've got all these jerseys in the Rugby Dungeon, let's give one away. Pick some prestigious jerseys that might be contenders. What have you got, JB?
Well, the things which are prestigious to me might not be prestigious. Well, no, that's a nonsense. Everyone wants a Tom Brady 14 shirt. I mean, that or my Miles Benjamin shirt. I don't think I can ever give those away. I just don't. But we do have a range of others. And the thing is, I've got almost all of them have got some sort of story attached to them. For instance, we always back ourselves at home shirts.
The Chris Robshaw 2015 World Cup.
Yep.
Signed by the skipper himself.
We've got.
You were so obsessed with Benetton and Dean Budd that you got a Benetton jersey sent.
Yep, can't have that one. That's,
I stole, well, not stole. I was gifted by Canterbury the very last Japan Rugby World Cup 2015 jersey.
We've actually got two jerseys from the most infamous season in Tier Tour history, the infamous cheat season.
Yeah.
Where it was season before that, or was it?
We've got a Chile jersey there, which was gifted to us by a listener in Romania.
Yep, who came from Chile to watch
Came
us.
From Chile to watch the live pod. And that was in Madrid.
In Madrid.
So we've got a Georgia match weight, we've got a Romanian match weight, the two jerseys they were wearing on the day of that game. We've got all of the Lions jerseys from the... So when the Lions played the provincial teams in New Zealand, we've got all of those up. We've got an Australia one. We've got Munster, we've got an old Brumbies one, we've got all sorts. So, we've got a Sevens USA one, which is signed, but maybe the most valuable of all the jerseys. I'm looking at it right now. I mean, it's hard to really put into words how valuable this is, and it's even harder to even reconcile the fact that I own it. It is a Newport Gwent Dragons 2012 vintage.
2013.
Is it? Yeah.
The year we began the podcast.
A classic top. Probably the most high-profile sponsor I've seen, Discount Tires. and that is signed by the entire squad, including many names.
Tao Lupe Faletau, who we were just talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Newport Gwent Dragons' most capped player of all time, Lewis Evans.
Lewis Evans. Can you believe Lewis Evans signed that shirt? Yeah. It is quite...
Hallam Amos.
Yeah, this is one of those seasons they didn't finish last in the table because of the incorporation of the two Italian sides. Yeah, so we think we're going to give away.
Basically, this is... Well, do you know what we should do? We should give away either one of the most impressive sides to play a match weight Lions jersey.
Or
the one of the worst club teams ever to play, the signed Newport Gwent Dragons jersey. Like, you've got the yin and the yang right there. The thing I like about your choice of the Newport Gwent Dragons is that is not one you will ever see worn, because no one would choose to wear that shirt.
No. Yeah, you want to... Yeah, so we're going to basically rip off... Saturday Morning Kitchen with James Martin, Food Heaven or Food Hell. So you can so you can either have the good one or the bad one. Now, the reason you'd want the bad one, like you say, Tim, you know, anyone can buy a Lions jersey, but you've really got to love something.
And lots of people do buy a Lions jersey.
And it means nothing to them. But no one's wearing the 2013 Newport Gwent Dragons jersey, signed by all the players.
You could walk into any rugby clubhouse anywhere in the world wearing a 2013 Newport Gwent Dragons signed jersey, and people would go,
"He means business.
He really, really likes rugby.
He must love rugby more than anything, actually.
He must love rugby more than anything.
Because more than his dignity.
Not only has he gone out of his way to buy a really niche jersey for an, at the time, terrible rugby team, but he's got that jersey of a terrible rugby team signed by the players
Lewis
of that
Evans.
Terrible rugby
Lewis
team.
Lewis Evans is on there.
I love it.
Yeah. So we will see. Those are the two which we'll give away first. I had something else to say about that, but it's escaped me, so never mind.
Well, if it pops back in your head, that's fine.
Yeah.
But there you go. So if you enjoy us and you'd like to show us that appreciation and help us to tee up all the amazing live events we want to do, so we can come and see you and have a Negroni with you when we're able to, both at home and abroad. Tier 2 tours need to be resurrected. That's the only tiers I ever want to hear spoken about in the future.
Yep.
Our Tier 2 tours. So we are, once again, patreon.com/eggchasers. And thank you to all the people that have already got in touch. Really, really appreciate it. So we'll make our draw for that shirt in due course.
Indeed.
I've got another question here.
Please.
Hold on. I'm just going to...
I've run out of questions, so you can either give me some or you can read them all.
Oh, I just rattle through them. We'll rattle through these as quick as we can. This one comes from Toronto.
Oh.
Fan of the Toronto Arrows, Blair. Hello, Blair. He says... he just says Happy New Year from Canada. He's talking about the COVID infections by rugby position, actually, and he reckons there might be a pattern. You're probably right. Hear me now, believe me later.
Yeah, props, obviously.
Yeah, it will be props.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
The shocking thing about this is, if there's a position with a BMI to be vulnerable to it, it probably is going to be there, isn't it?
Blair, you're a good man. Thank you for listening. Really appreciate it. Hi to Ethan John Banfield, who he says, hope you're doing well. How about a three-tier British and Irish league? 14-team premierships?
No.
With local conferences to foster local rivalries, e.g. one with Bristol, Exeter, Bath, Leinster, a successful Welsh region, Munster and Worcester, for example. A 14-team championship with the same, made up of... Basically, so you integrate the two leagues together and then put them in two conferences, but you geographically keep some rivalries.
Right. I'd need to see it in action... Initial thoughts are no. That said, here is the danger which we're going to encounter soon, is leagues like the Premiership, as precarious as it might seem right now, and the top 14, I think are going to start pulling away from the Pro 14. And the reason I say that is because the Pro 14 sides are so reliant on their union to feed into the regions and the provinces and the teams. So even though I say no, I think we're going to have to grasp the nettle at some point, because eventually European competitions aren't going to be viable, because there's going to be such a gulf between the Pro 14 teams, the top 14 teams and the Premiership teams. So maybe they're going to have to go down that route at some point anyway.
So I'm not sure you'll see that gulf. Oh, you might between some of them, but just the setup that you've got behind the Irish provinces in particular is so good that the conveyor belt of talent that comes out of the setup like BlackRock and the other colleges and academies that provide most of the talent for the Irish teams. There's too much talent there. They're too well organized, too well set up.
Can I just spend maybe 2 minutes explaining this a little bit better? That's okay with you boys, right? So this is where I'm coming from. The Premiership and the top 14 all been privately owned and having increased revenues traditionally year on year, although we know about this year's TV deal for the Premiership.
Yeah.
As those leagues grow stronger and stronger and attract bigger wages, the problem that the Pro 14 teams are going to have is to match those wages to keep their stars in their teams and in the top and in the Pro 14 are going to have to be subsidised by the national team. Now, if the national team's income is not growing as fast as the privately owned league's income, and there's no indication so far to suggest that it would do, then at some point the economics are going to dictate that the draw to France and the draw to England is going to be too great. So this is why...
Not to England, because there's a salary cap.
Yeah, but that salary cap will go up. So what will happen is as the French league increases, the salary cap will have to grow to make sure the English players don't say, oh, do you know what, forget this. It's just, you know, that's just the economics of the situation. Whereas the Pro 14 teams, if they think they can get around this by having a league that nobody watches or really enjoys that much, but subsidising their players staying in their country using the national teams, well, eventually that golden goose is going to run out. And you're going to be, like Ireland are now, spending a bigger proportion of your income that comes into the union on professional players and less on grassroots than, say, the RFU do, who spend an enormous amount on grassroots and less on professional players.
I think I disagree. I think if there's growth in income, it's going to be from international rugby, not club rugby.
The future's a few. Well, it looks to me, at least, and I hope you. I don't know if I hope you're right or not. I'm kind of agnostic on the whole thing, but it certainly looks to me is that the top 14 in France is going from strength to strength to strength in income, and the Premiership, although it's not profitable, you can see the salary rises. Certainly since we've been doing the podcast. Now, if those trends continue, eventually the economic pull will be too great. And if you're draining your unions too much to pay professional players, what's paying into your grassroots?
I'm probably more with you, Tim. At the moment, I think the bigger growth is the potential of the international game. And I mean, we've just seen the next 4 years of Premiership rugby have curtailed salary. So in 2024, it will still be lower than it was in 2018. So that's a 6-year trajectory of downward trend. So we're going to see that prediction in the club game.
Yeah, but if you think of this, right, for the English players and the French players, they have got their England money, right? And England don't make any less money than anyone else. In fact, they make a lot more money than anyone else, right?
Yep.
So you've got the England money and you've got the league money combined. Whereas the union money in Wales or Ireland or Scotland is going through to heavily subsidise almost all of their squads in their club game. And that's not sustainable, because you'll see the top 14 and the Premiership eventually pull away. Now, you're not seeing it right this second, but that is what will happen.
But again, you seem to be ignoring the Irish teams, because the Irish, Munster, Leinster, Ulster sell out pretty much every game. Whether it's European or Pro 14, they do not fit that model at all.
Agreed.
Basically, you're talking about the Welsh team and a bit of the Scottish and Italian.
Yeah. So the Irish are certainly in the best place position here, but I think even they are going to have to come to terms with the Pro 14 needs to get much more competitive and needs to generate a lot more revenue. Has to.
I don't disagree with that point, but I think, as in, the league needs to get better. I think the Irish teams, unless there is a stark turnaround in the trends that we're seeing, certainly in the Premiership, the Irish teams will be fine for a long while yet before that bites.
Oh yeah, a long while yet. But I think the trends. That's what I think. I think that the leagues in England and France are putting a lot of pressure on those unions to subsidise their club teams.
Next email from Stu Hamilton Smith. And Stu, I'm going to summarise your email, hopefully, and do it justice. Stu effectively says, have we missed a trick? Just not having Elliot Daly as a 13. Because he's, he's a Wasps fan and was a big fan of Daly when he was playing with them. And his first stint with England was at 13. And that's where he emerged and where he's primarily been. And where Saracens, I gather, are intending to play him. Fast, strong, could read the game well, cut through a defence, strong defensive game, howitzer of a left boot, if needed, off the tee. It was Eddie Jones that played him on the wing initially and then at fullback. But he's basically just saying, should Eddie Daly actually be a 13?
Well, I guess you'd say, should Jonathan Joseph be a 13 and not a winger? So the problem England have got is they've got bloody loads of these players.
Well, Jonathan Joseph is a 13, let's be honest. He was played as an auxiliary winger, but he has been a 13 his whole career.
I just think England have got so many 13s that you want your best players playing. Is Eric Daly the best 13, though? Maybe.
That's a good question, because I'm not sure he is the best 13. And I'm not sure in the last few years we've had any evidence that he is. And I'm not saying that he couldn't be, but he's hardly played there.
Yeah.
For club or country or the Lions, which he obviously had test starts on the wing for the Lions.
Played very well on the wing for the Lions too.
He did.
Just on Elliot Daly, do you remember his career-defining moment?
Playing against England for the Barbarians at 15.
Incorrect, Tim.
Career-defining moment?
Career-defining, the moment that he'll remember most.
A long-range pen for the Lions?
Incorrect. It was showing me around Twickenham. So he was in charge of showing a group of us around Twickenham, him, Stephen Myler. Who are the other two England players that we had? We had them for about half an hour showing us around.
Mako?
Not Mako. I did interview Mako.
Did interview Mako, and I'm not Welsh.
I'm not Welsh.
I'm not Welsh.
Terrible opening question. I've learnt a lot since then. who was the loose
head? What was the opening question you said to him that got the reaction, I'm not Welsh, mate?
So judging by your voice, you sound pretty Welsh. Are you regretting not playing for Wales? Something like that. It was a ridiculous opening question.
And you just turned him against you straight away.
Yeah, straight away. I'm not Welsh, mate. Ooh, you sound Welsh.
That would have. He might have seen the funny side if you had.
I was laughing.
If you had a sufficient Welsh accent that meant he was going.
Yeah,
you're clearly Welsh.
Yeah, that is true. And Matt Mellon was the other guy that showed us around. Those were our three England internationals before they had their always back ourselves at home World Cup.
I think I've just remembered his real career defining moment, Elliot Daly's real career defining moment.
Making a coffee for Jamie George?
Exactly, Jinx Ala Daly Coffee Shop.
Jinx Ala Daly Coffee Shop.
Yeah.
I do love the fact that they're now living just up the road from each other and because they're in a rugby team, they can still hang out. I like that bromance. That's a buddy cop movie waiting to happen. Jinx a la Daily. Good. Right, Nick Montgomery. I loved your recent section, boys, where you discussed radical tweaks in the laws to improve the game. For example, a knock-on is play-on.
Obviously.
Here's one to discuss. Well, we'll be the judge of that.
Yeah, quite.
Where a defending team catches the ball in their own 22 and calls mark, this is really radical, Nick. That defending team is awarded 1 point. This would still allow box kicks, but they need to be bloody good. Would reduce the frequency of crap kicking. May also encourage defending teams to drop players back, opening up some gaps for the team. How'd you like them apples? That is radical.
Wow, that is radical.
I can't go for points for a box kick, but I do like that you're trying to solve you're trying to solve an issue of changing the style of play and opening up more space. The unintended consequences if you could get 1 point for catching a box kick.
Well, you'd end up not catching it and going for the lottery. As in, you'd never mark the kick, or you'd like volley it or something. It would just be carnage.
No. So the defending team are awarded a point.
The
defending team get a point. So if you put a kick up, you better put it in a position that means your player gets it and the defender doesn't. Well, you just wouldn't risk it, would you? You would not risk it.
What would Rob Baxter say about this?
Unintended consequences.
Okay, so first of all, people don't kick. Therefore, the defences get higher and flatter. More men the attack don't kick. More men in the defence, more sturged game.
Yeah. You'd probably see a lot of grubber kicks. Or just a different type of kick.
That's a good shout.
Yeah, you would, actually. So, yeah, you might drop someone, two sweepers, rather than one.
Yeah. There is, on the box kick thing, I do understand. It comes out, it's born out of a situation where risk-reward is sometimes it's better not to have the ball and to try and make the opposition make errors. So I understand why it happens. One of the things I really hate most is when you do a box kick and it goes 10 metres forward and you regather the ball. And there's an element where I go, what the hell was the
really?
Point?
Really?
So what was the point?
I've only got 10 metres.
Yeah, but it's not really, is it? It's no tangible, real territorial
game. Do it 100
game.
Times.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100 times. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, 100 metres. Well, okay, so let me just explain this a little bit. So there's a few reasons you see these box kicks, particularly on the extremities of the field. Number one is, if you think about it, you're playing from the extremity of the field and you're about to whip it to your fly half or whatnot. If you're really close to the touchline, which is where most of these box kicks occur, very rarely do you see them in the middle of the park. You're faced with a situation where the opposition know the direction of the play and they're going to blitz you. So it's the strongest defensive position for the opposition to be in.
Oh, no, I understand.
Yeah, so I'm just putting some context in it. So that's the first bit. The second bit of it is, I think a well-executed box kick and a good chase is one of the best things to watch in rugby because it makes that landing an absolute lottery. So not only do you need to drop your man to catch it, you probably need to drop somebody else to make sure it's not spilt everywhere or to help him out. Because last thing you want is Josh Bassett, who is excellent at this sort of thing, nailing your guy. They're on the front foot. The next guy cleans over. You've lost the ball. And in a time of defence has been super stingy and organised, how do you pick a defence? Cause chaos. And that's why.
Oh, no, I understand why they're done. And I think going back to the Caterpillar Ruck thing, I think if there wasn't the sense and the literal fact that you're stopping the game down and the momentum's being sucked out of it every six rucks, then I think you'd be absolutely fine with it. But when that is the consequence or that is the end product of a really drawn out process of a Caterpillar Ruck, and
yeah, you're right. Look, the Caterpillar Ruck, we're not going to agree on. I don't mind them, but I
do a Caterpillar Ruck if you want. I haven't got a problem, but the 5 seconds that is in the law book should start when the ball is available.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but then you get referees fudging when it's available, don't you? It's difficult because that is the frustration fans. I don't think fans are that frustrated with the box kicks. I think they're frustrated with what they perceive to be the talentless nature and the pointlessness of the Caterpillar Ruck.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah. Sean Mulcahy or Mulcahy, I'm really sorry if I've got that wrong. That's not really elevator music, but I'll go with it.
It'll do.
Oh, it's all right. There you go. Got the organ back in.
Perfect.
That's
what she said.
This. I think some people have come up with a variation of this. A lot of people will be with you, Sean, on this one. His solution for the Premiership. First of all, you bring Saracens and Ealing up next season with no current team being relegated, making it a four-team team league. Split into two conferences, A and B, Newcastle, Exeter, Quins, Gloucester, Northampton, Wasps and Ealing in A, for example, Sale, Bristol, Irish, Bath, Leicester, Worcester, Saracens in the other. Each team from Conference A/B play teams in their conference home and away and play the other team once a season, alternating home and away each season. That means there's 19 regular games. The top two in each conference advance to semi-finals, the winners advancing to the final. The bottom team in each conference play an eliminator game, and the loser of that game then plays the team that finishes top of the championship. Mm. And the two teams that either the team that finishes bottom and the team that comes up do not play European rugby the next season. It means three less games in the regular season, better for player welfare. Keeps the trepidation of relegation and no European rugby for finishing bottom of your conference. while it also keeps the incentive and possibility of promotion for championship clubs.
It's definitely a better option than ring fencing. It's not as pure as relegation, but it has it. It's not as good as a naughty step.
That's probably very close to, in my head, what is the most sensible solution. I think that is a fairly complete, it's not perfect, but given all the constraints and all the limitations, I'd be fairly happy with something similar to that. If I was going to critique it, playoff game for promotion relegation does mean that you've got a very late decision on who's going up and who's going down, therefore budget, signings, all the rest of it, which can cause an issue. But I guess if you're building a team for longevity rather than short-term gain, then that should have less of an impact. So overall, I'd be fairly happy with that. If that was to be announced as the solution, I could take it.
And I quite like the thinking of that it's not just there's relegation, but you finish bottom of your conference but stay up. Well, you're still getting hit. You're still getting no European rugby. There's still you better not want to be down the bottom down the bottom there.
But there's that's an interesting thing, because there's positives and negatives of that. You can run so you don't get the money, but you can run a smaller squad for a year, and you also don't get the batterings that you get in Europe, and you can rest your squad better that year when you're not in Europe. Like Sale, for a good number of years when they were operating on a much smaller budget, and we've said this many times, they would go 6th and then 10th and then 6th and then 11th and 6th and then 10th, because every other season when they're playing in the lower European competition, they could compete in the league, and when they were playing in the higher European competition, they were just trying to survive.
And the number of clubs that you see that they work so hard to get into the Champions Cup, and they go, yeah, we finished 6th, yeah, and then let's put out our B team against Munster.
Munster away and Claremont away. No, thank you.
Well, to be fair, they probably go out with the best of intentions game one. By game two, they are down to their B team. After you've been away to Claremont, that is probably it.
That's a fair point. Can't argue with that. There are more emails as ever, but I think I'm going to keep those in our file for future podcasts, because I think we've come to the end of our energy and will at this point, and there's so much there. That was brilliant. But an opportunity for you to get in touch with any more questions, thoughts, starting points, topics, stories. Can we get some stories? Tour stories, game stories.
Anything.
Clubhouse stories, bus trip stories, kangaroo court stories. I'd love to get any of that stuff that you might have. So contact edchasers@gmail.com, and we'd love to feature you on the next one of these little Q&A pods that we do. You're right there, JB.
Yeah, I'm watching a man fly over an aircraft carrier. So that kind of does show that this is the end of the podcast, doesn't it?
It does. I'm going to go and listen to some more sea shanties.
Yeah, rightly so. Hey, that's the first thing that you can put on the Patreon. Put on the sea shanty.
I'll put on the sea shanty.
Do you want that sea shanty? It's on the Patreon.
I'll do it. Patreon.com/eggchasers, @rugbypodcast on Twitter. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.